Welcome to the Gig Ready Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I'm really excited that we get to learn and grow together. Ultimately, here at Gig Ready, we want each and every one of us to become better at what we do each and every day. Whether you're a touring professional, whether you're a corporate event professional, or somewhere in between, each day we have the opportunity to either stay where we are or get better. And through this podcast, we hope you learn something that takes you to the next level. As we work together, we want you to know that this podcast wants to bring value to you, and we need value back from each and every one of those of you that are our producers, our listeners, those that are a part of the podcast on the other end of this digital connection. We want you to do just a few things for us. Number one, please go and rate us on iTunes. Let people know that you may not know how great or how not so great we're doing. Give us a little bit of feedback. Help us get better. Secondly, tell your friends. Make sure they know what's going on, how they can work to become better professionals, better at what they do by listening, by joining in, by being a part. Lastly, shoot me an email, gigready@gigrent.com. We want to hear from you. Do you have ideas? Do you have parts of the event industry that we're not talking about that you want to learn about? Are there things that we could do better? Let us know. We would love to hear from you. Thank you so much, because this is the Gig Ready Podcast. Super excited to have two of my very good friends that I've known for many years, Kyle Means, Jim Sternagle, co-founders, Visional. They are fantastic operators, great technicians, great operators. We're excited to have them here. We're talking media servers. We're talking high resolution, switching engineering. We're talking content creation. We're talking motion tracking, black tracks. They do all of this. They do it all very well. Guys, thanks for being here today. Super excited to have you.
Well, the introduction.
Yes. Awesome. Well, I think the best place to start, you guys do so much. I mean, there's like this huge umbrella that falls under high resolution, media servers, motion tracking. It works together, but it all is very different. So let's talk real quick about your role as an operator, let's say, in crafting part of a show, being that part of a show. Kyle, Jim, I don't mind who goes first, but you know, what do you see as your role when you're brought into a project as crafting that event and what you do?
A big part of what we do is retrofitting ideas to an existing design, right? So we get called pretty far in the process. Mm-hmm. You know, there's already a stage design. There's already a theme to an event or a meeting. And so what we end up having to do is take that existing design and retrofit it to work in a high res or, you know, media server format.
For sure. It's tough sometimes that somebody says, hey, here's the shoe. It's a size 10. You have to fit your size 12 foot into it.
Exactly. We've gotten very, very good at fitting 10 pounds of potatoes in 5 pound sacks over the years.
Very much so. Awesome. So yeah. Jim, as a high resolution operator, when you walk into a show, someone brings you in, how do you see your role within not just the video team, but the team as a whole, as regards to live events?
When it comes to high resolution specifically, and coming in as the operator, kind of the tech that's putting that all together, frequently you walk in and they just say, we have this over here, this over here, this over here, and we think it's going to do this. and you sort of reverse engineer it really quick. Now, ideally, this is done well in advance, but
of course,
as we all know, oftentimes it isn't. So you do a little reverse engineering, you find out what the parts and pieces that they're going to want to see, where, when, and how. And you then make sure you take control of how it's being put together so that it will operate how you intend to operate it.
Got it. So interpretation, yeah. and then set expectations and then execute in that order normally. And especially when the client says, but the sales guy said, and then whatever we follow that with.
So it's a lot like being an RB sergeant, right? Like you're you're the head of the troops in the field, but you're taking orders from somebody who's not there. So you've got to both take responsibility for it and interpret things, interpret the directives in a way that you can actually make it happen.
For sure. Grabbing a, you know, grabbing a project, taking it from somebody else. Once you have that project in your hands, whether it's, you know, 5 days before the show or 100 days before the show, Kyle, how are you managing a project from start to finish? Once someone comes to you and says, "Hey, we need AI server, AI Avalites server," by the way, for those of you that may not know, we need this server, we need this gear in here. How are you managing that project from start to finish?
Well, Slack is a big part of that, right? So our team uses Slack on a daily basis, just like most people, most companies at this point use Slack or a Slack alternative to manage projects. And so that's been really important in getting all of us on the same page. But we, you know, we start by imagining what the final product is going to be and working the technical details backwards. Right. So, you know, the size of a screen or the size of the content might determine the type of server that we use or the type of switcher that we use. You know, we're a Spider House and we're an Avalites server and console house. So we tend to think of things in those terms. But we've got spiders with different input and output capacities and spiders with different resolution capacities. We've got media servers with different output capacities and capabilities. So we think inside those lines, but we also try to use the tool that's right for the job. And then once we get everything on paper, which we use, we typically use Vectorworks and OmniGraffle to do, you know, designs and sketches.
Okay. Perfect.
Flows. Once we get those things on paper, everything goes into Slack. Everybody watches the progress, the project progress, you know, whether they're the person responsible for it or not. That way, once we're all on site, at least our team knows what's up.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, very cool. So then do you guys set up each project has its own Slack page that all of the details, all of the information goes into? So regardless of Jim, Kyle, whoever's working on it beforehand, whoever picks up the baton and goes on site, all those details are built in there?
Yeah, exactly. And the beauty of that is when you bring, like we have a small salary team, but we use a lot of regular kind of permalancer type guys on a regular basis. So when you add a person like that into a Slack channel, when it's, you know, months into the process, they get all of that backstory. So it's a really useful way to communicate like a project that's developed over a long time to somebody who's new to a project.
Okay. Fantastic. How much time do you find you spend managing expectations in a project? I mean, is that the constant, like banging the drum every single day?
Or I think you've hit it on the head there.
Yeah. I think what makes a good project manager in my mind is the joy in the word no. I just love telling clients no.
Coming up with new and
discovered that a long time ago. Yeah.
Coming up with new and creative ways to to not say no, but really say no all at the same time.
Exactly. It's the nuance to know, you know, well, we can't do that, but we can't do this.
Oh, we can totally do that, but we need to add this, or we might need two more people on board now to start working on it. Yeah.
So Jim, you bring up a good point there. When talking about equipment, how many times has somebody quoted, you know, a Spider X20 when it needed an X80 or something of that nature? And then you're looking at a project saying, well, Now I'm stuck.
Didn't quote a spider at all.
Or to, yeah, exactly. You know, here's your 2ME Black Magic, and we've got 5 blends and whatever else. So, Jim, how
I would
you?
Say that's pretty frequent. That's frequent, and you get sort of an expectation list when you're at the very beginning of the bid or just the, you know, information gathering, and they're telling you we need this and this and this and this. But wait a minute, I know you, or I know people like you. When we get on site, are you going to also need a webcast that's going to need to be separately cut? Are you also going to need, green room feeds separately cut? Are you going to need things, going to overflow rooms, a separate record maybe of just camera cuts, all these little details that a lot of people just think when they get on site, they can just be like, oh, make sure this is going there. You're like, oh, but that's not what's going to screen. So it's something different. It's a entirely other, set of goals.
At a certain point, high resolution engineering becomes like plumbing, right? Like you you're the guy with the router, right?
Yeah.
And we need these feeds and we need them to go there. And then suddenly you end up being like a glorified plumber.
Got it. Yeah. I need 4 to 8. I need that. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, now we need 8 DSMs instead of 4 DSM feeds. And
exactly. Mm-hmm. And 4K completely complicated that, because when it was all 3G SDI or even, HD SDI,
yeah,
that all was very easy. 4K changes it into something else entirely. We've got to then we've suddenly got to deal with like region of interest stuff, and
you
can't pipe it through a standard router. And yada yada.
Got it. Okay. So how are you managing client comes to you and says, we're doing this, and you realize, oh crap, we don't have the gear. What is your process for approaching them and saying, we need, I need more money. We've got to get more gear, more people. I mean, do you just come right out, boom, this isn't going to work. Or is there, what's the thought process and how do you navigate that relationship? Because it is tenuous. I mean, it's a tough one when people realize either A, they didn't have the right gear, they weren't quoted the right thing. I mean, there's a lot of emotion tied up with that.
Go ahead.
I'm going to let you start this. I'm going to step away for just a moment and get somebody into math class. I'll be right back.
All right, cool. Yeah, it can get a little nuanced, right? I mean, and it all depends on what point you are in the process and where you are on the food chain, right?
Yeah.
Because if it's our project and we've been involved for a long time, then when something wasn't quoted right or something isn't there on site, then that's our fault. Right?
Of course.
Because we should have performed that discovery so that doesn't happen very often because we try to be really thorough with our discovery process. But if it's somebody else's project and we're third or fourth down the line from the end user, then it's a completely different discussion, right?
Yep.
So we fall on the side of, we try to always be as friendly to the end result as possible. So we try not to create drama if we can avoid it. And we tend to fall on the side of let's get the gear in, let's make the end result happen, and then work out the details after the fact. So, the nice thing about the types of equipment that we deal in is it is very scalable. So if we need another server output or out of outputs, it's pretty easy to just add a box or change a box or whatever, and add that output. It's not the end of the world. I mean, just like any other, just like Spider and media servers, they all have layer limitations. They have input and output limitations, but we're lucky in that we're we have a good amount of gear on all of those fronts. So it's pretty easy to expand if we need to.
Yeah. Have you ever been, so now let's go back. Let's look at it from the other side. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in a situation where everything was quoted, you had all the stuff, you had all the gear, suddenly you get into you have the people spec'd and ready, and then you get into a project and suddenly you realize, not only do I not have the gear that I need, but the person that I selected for this particular project is not the right fit. How do you navigate on the other side of that?
Yeah, I mean, we work with some really high-end people.
Of course,
that's less of an issue, I would say. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Now, a more common issue is we don't have enough people to do the function that is required. Like, we need a separate camera director. The spider op can't also direct cameras, that kind of thing.
Yes.
There are second and, black tracks.
But yes, yeah, they can. There's only second. Two cameras. It's,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've gone different directions with that. I mean, we've both done plenty of shows where we're also cutting cameras on the side while cutting spider, and it's not fun. Sometimes you just have to do it if you get to that point, and that's the situation you find yourself in. But that's the point of good discovery conversations, is to try to assess those things out before you're on site.
Yeah, discovery. It's the theme, you know, as I've been doing a lot of these, everything comes down to talking beforehand, communicating as early in the process as possible.
If you've got a show that you're willing to let something fall apart, then, you know, by all means, like, let's cut corners over here.
Don't have those conversations, right? we can phone it in, but it's going to look phoned in.
It will, 100%. But we all hate phoned in shows too. I mean, we put in extra work that at no cost to the end client to make sure that these things, like, that they happen. So
but I think that's what makes an effective partner when it comes to media servers and high-res engineering, is we know which corners we can cut.
Yeah.
The audience won't notice. And corners have to be cut on every single show. It's just about knowing which ones, you know, are going to actually have an effect on the audience perception, which ones aren't.
100%. Darn, I had a really good question and now I forgot it. So we're going to move on to the next one. Looking at your software solution, so you mentioned Slack, you mentioned Vectorworks, OmniGraffle. Are there other pieces of software that you guys are using to help stay organized, keep things on track, keep the ball moving down the road?
I think just some of your standard business tools, you know, G Drive and things that we can all access. I mean, we're obviously also always on the phone texting, like, and then emailing a lot. Obviously you're keeping in touch with clients through email. And so I don't think we're opposed to using anything.
Yeah.
It's whatever works for the job. Keeping ourselves organized, we pretty much stick to those common.
Nice. Yeah. That's great.
We do use current RMS, which I think a lot of the industry uses at this point to manage, you know, gear and quotes and
that's,
labor allocations and stuff like that.
But, yeah,
there's a lot of those systems out there.
Luckily, made it past the days of you know, putting your invoice in through Excel or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, in the beginning, we managed 100% of our gear and labor through just calendars.
Yeah.
And that gets pretty,
it got big
pretty quick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. When you've got 20 calendars and you're checking and unchecking them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. You know, it's like Excel spreadsheets of like, where's the gear? And then you've got all your colored cells and you're like, oh wait, oh crap. I missed that cell, 'cause I didn't see it was off the page. And now, you know, I'm getting myself in trouble.
Well, anybody who's ever broken a formula in Excel and then had it like come back to bite you later on knows that that's just not the way to do things.
100%. I mean, that's inventory management is huge, and not just inventory management, people management, taking care of all of that. So you have the people, you're managing a project, you get on site. Talk about your process once you get on show site. I mean, even from the when you arrive, you know, let's say you have a travel day the day before, talk through that process. What does that look like for you from start to finish, regardless of the length of the project?
As far as
start drinking, but Jim probably has a better answer.
Yeah, oh no, that's from as soon as I get on the airplane. Yeah, that's but getting to the airport, I find that evening before or that morning before to be probably the most stressful time of the entire project, even when it's a stress-filled project. Mm-hmm. Making sure and rechecking what I'm bringing with me, my work box, and do I have all the right parts and pieces for this job? Because I have a lot of common things that I'll bring to every job, but then some of them require other things. And do you have enough underwear? Did I remember socks? You know, what kind of days are we looking at? Are we going to be sitting in a room for 17 hours? Do I need to go to the store and buy a bunch of healthy snacks because I'm only going to be fed, you know, arena catering the whole time? Yeah. Like those seemingly insignificant questions become a very big deal, I think.
Yeah.
Do I have my third sweater that I'm going to need because they keep it at meat locker temperature backstage?
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
It's 90 degrees outside, but you need a winter coat backstage. Yeah.
Gosh, man. So what do you, Jim, that you bring up a great point. What do you travel with? What are the things you're traveling with regularly?
You know, I carry boxes of rocks and I just make people lift them everywhere I go. And it's like, it feels like it sometimes, you know. Got a couple Pelicans that I'll bring. One will have, generally speaking, two laptops in it, and then an assortment of hard drives and connectors and other basic travel stuff, you know, extra credit cards or whatnot. And then the big box of tools, you know, you got the things that you always bring. I'm always bringing a little spider controller or of some sort with me, or, you know, something to have extra keys around you, or, you know, screwdriver. Oh, you gotta have a screwdriver, a knife. Yep. Don't forget a knife. And don't bring it on the plane, as my daughter has tried and they got her, you know. She's learning though. She's learning.
Totally.
Don't let her tell you. Don't tell her I told you that. Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. Kyle, what about you? What are you traveling with these days? Are you like super light, or are you carrying box of rocks as well?
No, we got boxes of rocks. We don't travel light. I wish we could. That would be a beautiful thing. I mean, it's nice when you can ship it ahead of time. Ship,
of course.
Yeah.
And at this point we've got enough Pelicans that we can do that sometimes. But most of the time we're just, you know, we're lugging it. I mean, Jim mentioned the spider controller. I think the Stream Deck totally changed how all of us get things done.
Yeah.
Between the Stream Deck.
Adds that little extra.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Yeah. You know, Very cool. Of having big controllers are behind us at this point, thankfully.
Yeah.
So that's been really nice.
You mean you don't carry a Montage in that Pelican?
Yeah. No. Luckily we never had to buy a Montage. I'm really happy about that. I mean, it's a cool box.
One key item I found on especially the larger convention center shows is I've got a scooter that I throw in a Pelican, like in a rifle Pelican, folds up, bring that, and suddenly that hour for lunch where you have to walk a half hour to go get food, I can actually go do it, zip over, zip back. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful thing.
Have you been getting yelled at by
security?
You know, you find your way around that though, you know, like, okay, you head out your back door, go to the dock and ride down the dock, or go out, you know, go right out front, right? Or it's a free world out front, you know?
Yeah.
Like, can't do anything to me out here.
The tea selection is really important too. Like having enough like mint tea in your workbook so that you can make yourself tea every now and then.
And that, so that leads me into the next question. What are three things, so for both of you, three things that you have to have to do every show? They can be, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's like earlier today it was Dr. Pepper and Swedish Fish. I mean, that was like, you know, but like what are those three things you have to have for every show? Jim?
I'm going to steal that first one right there. Tea. I'm a tea snob. I don't drink coffee when I'm working. And especially not crappy coffee. So I bring a lot of tea.
Yep.
Good selection. Yeah.
Copy that. Two more. You got two more there, buddy. Come on.
I got two. Okay. I'm going. Okay. Second thing I bring is I definitely bring a clean, water bottle for myself. That, awesome. And as soon as I get on site, I will go and hunt down where to find clean filtered water, because you can always find it somewhere, almost always. And it may be back a few halls or whatever. And I always try to keep that clean water filled and drink water while I'm working, you know,
100%.
Let's see. What would be a good third? An iPad for watching movies on the plane. And catching up with some reading and like that was that used to be before the COVIDs or COVIDs or, you know, whatever, COVIDia, we'll say the COVIDia, before that, that was when I caught up on the shows on the airplane, you know?
Got it. Okay. Kyle, what about you, buddy? Three things.
So I'm going to repeat my previous answer, but Stream Deck is absolutely number one.
Okay.
Stream Deck with Companion. And you know, that's because the myriad of devices that you can control from that thing with those two pieces of software combined is really, really important when you get into a situation where there's not a third graphics op and you need somebody to cue that background slide. Being able to do that remotely and build it in is massive. The other thing is we have an Avalites T2 dongle, which is a two output DMX and ArtNet console in a box, pretty much. Little guy about this big with two DMX outputs, and that allows me to bridge anything ArtNet into what I'm controlling. So
wow.
And that'll actually work with Stream Deck. So if you've got a TCP command that you need to send at this point, but you only got an ArtNet controller, you can actually add Companion as an ArtNet device to the Avalites Titan, and away you go. So those three integration tools, Companion, Stream Deck, and Titan together, allow us to do a lot of really crazy things.
Got it.
When our backs are against a wall. The personal item that I require on every show is a clean black hoodie, because it gets cold.
Yes.
Backstage. And I emphasize clean because if you've ever had to sit 16 hours in a stinky hoodie, it's a bad day. You have to make the choice between stinky or cold.
Copy that. And you would you rather take stinky or would you rather take cold?
I'll take stinky over cold.
Oh yeah,
but I don't like it.
Yeah, but it's still yeah. Gear wise, yeah. I generally speaking. Sorry, baby, okay. Mama calling.
No worries.
Un momento.
That's all good, dude. We're here. I got great questions for Kyle. Like, how does he keep his hair looking so good even through the quarantine? And
yay! Got to answer those though.
3 months of quarantine hair right here, right?
Awesome.
Yeah.
My question was only, you don't need it. It's okay. Don't feel compelled to explain why. It's like, oh no, 3 months, like. Hide the hair. I get it.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, did you just shave it off, dude? Did you just like buzz it?
Yeah, basically. I let my daughter cut it first.
That's awesome.
And then I did the rest.
We should cut in video of Annalise cutting Jim's hair.
Oh, absolutely, man. I need to get that video from you, by the way. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Dropbox that to me.
That's awesome. The freelancing, the freelance lifestyle is wonderful. I think we all agree that we enjoy it most of the time, except for right now. It creates some freedom, some opportunity. You know, you don't necessarily feel as tied down per se, but I mean, how do you find work as a freelancer, whether you're a seasoned, whether you're just starting out? What is the process you go through, or how do you find work as a freelancer? I'll let both of you guys kind of take a crack at it.
I'm going to skip slightly ahead and then back up here.
Yeah.
I'll say one of the things that, you know, we've found, and I think most people find in general, when you've got somebody that you're working with, working for, and you run into other people, you need to maintain the relationships you have and keep them good, keep them honest. Like, and Jordan, we've been working with you and we all kind of know that situation very well, but let's pull that back, and you're coming into things not knowing anybody. This is it's important to meet, I don't know, people like us, I guess. Just get your name out there and let us know you're willing to learn, really. Like, don't come into it saying you know what you're doing. Say, I want to know I want to help, and can I help? And I mean, if I don't know something and I'm working with somebody and they've got a truck and I've never seen this truck or whatever, you ask questions so that you don't do things twice or wrong, you know.
Yeah. Right.
Get all the information you can. And so, there's a certain point where just a willingness and an eagerness trumps ability at a certain level, you know. If that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, and you're right, to a point, and that willingness will get you, it's like it gets you to here, but then willingness again will only take you so far.
But then you're making these contacts, and when you're making those contacts, they will remember you, and when somebody else brings up your name, they'll say, "Oh yeah, I know that guy. Right. Yeah, he's good. Yeah, bring him in."
Got it. Huge amount of humility required.
And anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Kyle, what's your process like?
Well, so, you know, Jim and I were freelancers when we met. And my golden rule of freelancing back when I was a solo freelancer was number one, be nice. Number two, do good work. Mm-hmm. And if you follow those rules on any show, regardless of where you're at, you're going to be just fine. So Jim and I met and gelled really well because we both were abiding by those rules previously. We came into the job that we met on with those two rules, and we kind of identified that in each other.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't feel like a freelancer. I feel like a member of a really good team. And, mm-hmm. and I think, you know, that's what makes what Visional offers different from the average high-res freelancer or the average high-res media server designer, you know, content creator, all the services we provide. The reason you would call us is because we have that team already in place, and you're not walking in with a crew of people that come from different parts of the country and different backgrounds and different, you know, that don't know each other like that. You get some of that gel on your crew already just by working with us, because we can provide people and gear and a team that has done many, many shows together and are willing to have that level of humility and be part of a crew. You know, we've always said we'll wear anybody's shirt. You know, the partnership is key.
Yeah.
That's sort of my philosophy on those things.
So you're pooling the expertise, put it in all in one place, and then people don't just have access to that one person's brain. They now have access to two, three, four people, five people's brains.
You get the team for the price of one. We can run scenarios in the background and ask each other questions, and then one person can deliver that answer or that final product.
Sure. That works great.
You know, it also helps on the internal support side. You know, let's say you've only got one of us on a show. Well, we've got 10 people on our Slack who are experts in their specific niches. So if I get in a jam, which, you know, happens, then I can reach out to my team first, solve it internally, and then we don't ever have to get into a big, you know, Facebook support situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talk to each other a lot. Yeah. We're always on each other's jobs, basically. Yeah.
No, that's great. I mean, you have the ability to reach out, find people, talk with people. I mean, and that's really what we're doing here. It's like we're figuring out how to do things better by gaining information from other people. And whether it's Slack, whether it's text, whether it's phone calls. I remember the question from earlier that I was going to ask, and it can fall into this world is, so Jim had mentioned using text message, phone calls, emails, all of those things end up in these days coming into a show. I mean, you get your client text messaging you at 11:30 at night saying, "Oh, I was in bed laying there and I thought about this thing. And if we could make this guy fly in from the rooftop because of this thing, and he dove in and lands in a swimming pool in the middle of the stage, that'd be amazing."
On a motorcycle.
Exactly. But how, what do you guys do to, like, when somebody texts you and you need that information to go back, how do you guys incorporate that? Do you like a copy and paste into Slack? Do you, like, what do you do to kind of make sure that's all cohesive and you don't miss those things? Because I've been that guy where it's like, I forget to do that. And then suddenly I'm typing through my email, trying to find an email. And I'm like, I know we talked about this. And it turned out it was a text message.
I think it's situational, really. I mean, it depended upon how, what exactly was stated and if it needs to really go into our job, or was it just something that was, it's going to be a conversation between you and said producer or something.
Yeah.
It's so situational. If it's something that needs to build itself into our jobs, it'll end up in the quote in Slack. If it's something that's a conversation is being had, maybe it just requires a conversation in person before anything is done. Like, don't get too crazy just yet. Like, don't change the world.
Yeah.
By the time I get downstairs to the ballroom, their minds could have been changed, you know, right. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
For our purposes, I think Slack is the document of record.
Yeah.
You know, if there's something important that the team needs to know, our team, it needs to go into Slack. And if it doesn't, then, you know, then that can cause issues down the line.
Sure.
I'm a naturally forgetful person. Jim can attest to that. So I learned a long time ago, if I don't write something down, if I don't put it in Slack, if I don't put it in the calendar, then I'm more than likely going to forget. So
yeah. I'll add that. Yeah. Take lots of notes, you know, always take notes when somebody's telling you something.
Yep.
You're going to remember it, right? Because it's easy. It's like, oh yeah, this is that show. It's so obvious. I'll remember this conversation forever. Tomorrow, I'm going to have another conversation with somebody else, right, about another show. And by the next day after that, these will all have blended together. Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's another area where Slack is really helpful, because if you've got a, you know, show 2019 channel, and then that show repeats the next year, and you've got a show 2020 channel, you can refer back to the conversation that you had a year ago and look for the issues that you had, and then have those conversations with your client that didn't come up, you know? So the historical information becomes this building trove of information that makes the show better and better each year. And that's a value add that, you know, that you can provide to your end clients.
That's actually a great lead into a question I just thought of, is how do you guys take from, okay, 2019 show, 2020 show. What do you guys do as like a post, you know, post-event assessment? You know, a lot of people don't do anything. They'll just be like, oh, it was a great show. You know, what do you guys do to
I thought about that a little bit here. So the immediate post-show, if you get good show from, you know, said client, that may be all you ever get. And that's a wonderful thing to get.
Yeah.
Now, internally, or like production team side, that's another story. You go back, and Kyle and I have done this many times. We go into, it's like, all right, we can never do that again. Making notes, you know, like, whenever we do this, we need to be more forceful up front about, you know, how this needs to run, or things like that. But, I don't know that there's necessarily a standard practice or an SOP on this just yet. A lot of our jobs are repeat business.
Yeah.
And you go into it with an expectation and you leave exceeding those expectations. And so there's not a whole lot really to backtrack on. It's a lot of the new experiences or new things that we are, you know, we also have a lot of jobs where this has never been done before. So coming out of those, it is a lot of like, let's check our notes. What could have we done better? You know, and we know that now.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Each show informs the next.
You know,
whether it's a repeat gig or whether it's, you know, this BlackTracks implementation is going to change the way we do the next BlackTracks implementation. That's completely different, but you learn as you go. And I think it really goes, it all goes back to that level of humility that you have to have, where every single day you're learning. Even if you're learning something about something you've done for 20 years, you're still learning as you go.
Yeah. Humility is huge. I've found that I like to work with gentlemen such as yourself who understand the fact that they don't know everything and that there is always the capability to learn more. You know, we've all worked with the guys that are like, oh, I know the stuff, man. You can't tell me what to do. You can't tell me that next thing. And inevitably, those are the people that I don't want to work with. I mean, humility is huge. I love that. So from a humility standpoint, what's the toughest job that you've ever done? Hardest job? Like, you're like, I am never doing that ever, ever again.
Well, okay, those are probably two different questions.
Oh, all right. Okay, there we go. You know,
I mean, I mean, toughest job you've ever done, maybe one I would do over and over, but just not back to back, you know, because
okay.
they tend to high risk, high reward kind of situations.
Totally, 100%.
Jobs I never want to do ever again, like setting up a giant warehouse on a pier, the length of a pier full of drape. That's not one I'm particularly fond of or want to go back and do again.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about the toughest, even if you wanted to do it again, toughest job you've ever done.
You know, sometimes location is everything. I think one of the toughest has been for an unnamed client here, but it was out in the middle of nowhere, and you need to make sure you have everything there that you could possibly need for a show that you also know is going to be a modern marvel of technology, you know, like launching a rocket or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Those are also some of the ones I enjoy the most, or when you're dealing with, say, customs or things like that, and you've just got to have every nut and bolt accounted for well in advance. Those are always fun.
So just international shows in general, when you're bringing your own gear with you?
Yeah, those are two separate too. Like the middle of nowhere shows in the US, you also, like, if something goes bad, you're not going to find it like within a day, you know. There's no airports Packs around. Spares.
Got it.
Spares and everything.
What about you, Kyle? Toughest show you've ever done?
Well, I'll tell you about the very first AV experience I ever had. I was 23, right out of college, and I got a job at a hotel AV provider, and I literally walked in the first day. I was hired because there was a big show. It was a small town. I grew up in Chattanooga, near Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay.
And so it was one of these things where this hotel AV office had, you know, done a million slide projectors in boardrooms, and then they got their very first big show. And so they got money to staff up. So they hired me, and I walked in the first day, and they literally said, okay, here's how you put up drape. Now put up 150 feet of this brand new black drape still in the packages. So I went home after a, you know, 12, 13, 14 hour day, something like that, literally covered in velour dust.
Oh.
Chafed in every part you can imagine being chafed in. and exhausted while wearing a suit and tie the whole time, because it was hotel AV in the 2000s.
Oof.
So I remember I was living with my parents at the time, right out of college. So I went home and saw my dad, and he said, "You're quitting that job." and the fact that I'm still doing AV more or less, you know, here 20 years later, I think speaks to a certain kind of mentality that those of us in the business have. That
yeah,
we're doers. We're the type of people who stick through a tough job. So
100%.
That was the job I never want to do again. Toughest job. We did an event last year where we were providing media servers and black tracks and whatnot. And the show team had hired a Resolume guy who did the entire show in Resolume ahead of time, and then expected me as the Avalites media server op to recreate his show on the day of the show. So it was one of those where we load in at 6 a.m. and then I had from like noon to like 5 to receive all the assets and duplicate his entire Resolume show in AI. That was not fun.
Wow.
And I never, ever, ever, ever.
That was one of those shows where we realized an important point of having enough people for the job when they quote it. A little more notice on what was exactly going to be happening would have been nice.
Got it.
Now,
wow.
All these things being said, set up drape. Like, don't not set up the drape. We all have had to do it, you know. And we all still have to do it once in a while now. It's like, crap. You need a green room up right now, this second. Who's got hands? Let's go.
Yeah.
You know?
It's about as close to hazing as you can get in this industry.
Exactly. Yeah.
Set up that drape. Yeah, so bring them in. Guys, we're draping off this entire room. It's 100 by 80, and we need it on three sides. Yeah. Go. 1 hour. And we're, the team atmosphere on site, being a part. I mean, that's one of the things that I love about what we do. Very, very rarely do I run into someone who doesn't want to be a part of a team. You know, they want to be an individual out doing their thing. You know, I know a couple of operators who are that way. This is my world. I do this. I don't do anything else. This spigot right here, this BNC, as soon as the data hits this thing, my responsibility is done and it's everybody else's. Yeah. But being a part of a team is huge in this day and age, being able to work with people because, I mean, it takes a village. I mean, you know, you got 5 people at front of house, 8 people backstage. You got people moving gear on stage, off stage. You know, working within all this stuff, what do you guys like the most about being a part of that team, being the high resolution operator, the media server operator, the Blacktrax operator? Like, what do you like the most about all of the everything that you guys do?
I'll start. The thing that I have grown to really love about the space that we occupy in the market and the way we do things is the opportunity for mentorship. You know, we come in contact with so many young people mindset. There you go. They have the right mindset. They have the desire to learn, but they might not have the access to the gear. They might not have the access to training. They might live in, you know, a part of the country where there's not a footprint of AV companies, so they don't know how to get started. And running into those people has been really gratifying for us, or for me personally. You know, getting them into the system, like giving them opportunities to learn, and then seeing the way that they go with that. I mean, I think a lot of the reason we started Visional was to solve the freelance problem, where you have, you know, this industry of mercenaries that don't belong to a team. They're individuals, and so they don't have the resource of team learning. So we wanted to bring some of that, you know, more organized process to an industry that's run pretty much by solo, sole proprietors and solo operators.
That's awesome. Jim, what about you?
I would add to that. I would agree with that. And then add to that, the family vibe you get with the people that maybe aren't in your roles, you know, you've got your producers or stage managers or audio guys, people, they come in and you see them regularly over the years, and it becomes a really large extended family. And there's nothing quite like it, you know, to walk in and it's a reunion kind of, and everybody's already working well together before you even step foot, you know, like we know, you can come to me if you have a problem with this thing that I'm not responsible for, but remember that time we did it? How did we get that to work or whatever, you know, it's a good thing.
It is. I love
it. That's probably what's been so hard for the industry over the last few months going through this lockdown is the loss of that family that you see on a regular basis, and that camaraderie. You know, everybody else can work from home, and they're just, you know, if you're an accountant, you're part of an accounting team. Now you're working from home and you're zooming in and you're talking, you know, you still get that level of camaraderie, but you know, how do you work from home as a freelancer in the AV industry? You don't.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's been tough for people to adjust to.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, man, we're human beings. We are personal people. We want that interaction with other people for sure. For people that want to get, let me go back. What do you like least about what you do? What's the least favorite thing about what
you I can answer that easily. Yeah. Not seeing my daughter for weeks at a time sometimes. That became the least favorite, you know, once she was around.
Of course.
But that's a easy win on that.
100%.
Yeah.
Kyle?
Oh,
you can't say nothing. I don't like. I like everything about what we do. Come on.
Oh, dude, getting sick in old convention centers.
Ooh,
that is just Black Death. That
really sucks. I'll tell you. I wouldn't have said before the coronavirus lockdown. I would not have said that it was the travel or being away from home, but I think I've discovered a new appreciation for being home over the last 3 months. So going back to the level of travel that we were doing before the virus hit, I think will be a lot more difficult than it was.
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But, you know, that said, the it's evolving and what the industry looks like after this is going to be very different. So we're going to have a different set of problems.
Yeah.
What I like least is probably working with people that don't fit the characteristics that we've been describing over the last 45 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. You run into so many still.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the reality is there is far more demand in our industry than there is supply. And that's why, that's why there are folks that are that we come in contact with that probably wouldn't get a lot of work if it wasn't for the level of supply that exists or the level of demand that exists out there.
And, yep.
I wish that my wish for the future is that we can continue to grow the family team atmosphere that we've been working towards and that we can work with those people a little less.
Yeah.
They make the job a lot harder than it needs to be.
Yeah, dude. I mean, we can call it like it is. I mean, there are people that just, they're only here because they have nowhere else to go and they don't want to make a change, and they just get grumpy and they get frustrated and age doesn't matter in that case.
Right.
Or they just
right.
don't want to work. I mean, I run into young and old that it's like every single thing you ask them is a slog. It's like, oh, I got to go do that thing now. Oh, I got to go do that. I mean, I look at them like, if you don't want to be here, go home. I'll work with one less person on this crew and get the job done and not have to listen to your groan and belly ache. And, I did a job last year where we were setting up drape. We were setting up drape and
all bad things come back to drape.
and we were setting it up around the screen and I grabbed some guys that were not doing anything. I said, hey guys, come on over here. We're going to set up this drape. And the first thing out of this guy's mouth was like, why do we have to set up drape? That's scenic guy's job, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, and I turned right to him. I was like, dude, if you don't want to do it, you can leave. There's the door. Yeah. Really, truly, I have no problem calling people out like that because it just, it's going to weed out those that don't want to be here. Like if you don't want to be here, find somewhere else to be.
That negative energy, is far more damaging to a show than not having the right piece of gear or not having the right number of people. If you even have one person on the crew that is draining the positivity of a crew, it can be really, really damaging.
100%.
We've all seen it. We had a guy, who shall remain nameless, that we nicknamed Speed Bump years ago because his existence on the crew made everything 10 times slower.
Oh gosh.
And the thing is if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I don't know those people, then you might be those people. it's important, I think, for us all to have a level of self-reflection if we want to.
If your nickname has the word speedy in it or anything like that.
Probably in jest.
Self-awareness, a critical skill that is learned. I've had to learn it. And honestly, I still feel like I'm pretty terrible at it sometimes. So I get it.
What? Yeah, we do get trapped in our own little bubble sometimes. That's for sure.
100%. If I want to become, you know, I want to be a high-res guy. Now, of course, in my case, when I wanted to become a high-res guy, Jim was kind enough to take time, introduce me to a Spyder X20, you know, and then 3 weeks later shoved me out the door on a show with a bunch of blends and a bunch of other stuff. But, you know, if I wanted to be, I'm listening, I'm saying, hey,
Wouldn't have done it if we didn't think you could. Yeah.
I appreciate it. I really do. It was super fun. 5 18-hour days in a row or whatever the heck it was. Mm-hmm. It was such a great show. I want to be a high-resolution operator. I want to work with media servers. Like, what can I be doing now that can prepare me for that? Even if it might be a year in the future, what can I be doing now, physically, mentally, to start working my way in that direction?
Well, I would say the number one thing is reach out, right? Expand your network. Because even if, I mean, we'd love for it to be us, but even if it's not us, you know, typically you're going to find that people are really inviting and looking to spread the net and allow people in. I mean, we're you know, there's two mindsets of the really high end guys. There's the people who really want to protect their information and keep it from getting out for fear of losing work. And then there's the type that are free with information and free with training. And that's where we lie on that. So
yeah,
I would say networking is the most important thing. You know, there's a lot of training resources that are out there that are free right now. So, you know, and we've all got a lot of time on our hands, so there's no reason not to be training. But the most important thing is getting on a show site with a team that does it well. And if you reach out, if you network, you'll find those opportunities. They'll come to you.
Got it. Yeah. Jim, what are your thoughts?
I think the same thing. I would just add, like, honing some of the regular skills that you're going to need, whether you know it or not, like, just, you know, figuring out pixel spaces and counts and doing math on the fly quickly with those types of things, and knowing how to get to the numbers you need to know, whether, you know, it projection lens numbers or, you know, these sorts of things. It's good to just be aware of them and kind of drill those things a little bit, just different scenarios, I would think. Okay. Or see what is up there and figure out how did they come up with those numbers. Like, why am I sending the LED processors this signal instead of that? And or how are we getting all these things broken up into these different areas? I don't know. I find that you know, the numbers part of it, it's fun to figure those things out, you know, and it's really wonderful when you just yell over to the LED processor guy, like, yeah, you're starting at 567 or whatever, and mm-hmm. and they just punch those numbers in, and all of a sudden, blip, things fall right into place. And it's like, all right, cool. Yeah, it's like,
I did math correctly today. Woo!
I know. I was like,
So what are the last question I always ask everybody that I talk to is, what are two things? So right now we've been at, people haven't been gigging for a little while, for the most part. We don't know when the next gig is going to be, but whether they're listening to this today or next year, what are two things that they can be doing to be more gig ready for that next gig, whenever it tends to be, from the one that they just did till the next one? Jim, I'll let you, if you think of something, I'll let you go first, but.
I can't, like, stress important. It's very important that when you do get some information, you really go over it and think about what's wrong with it or what's right about it, so that you're not seeing it for the first time when you're on site, if you can help it. Think about how that flow is going to work and what are you going to be doing, and ask questions. You know, if you are getting a job, regardless of what the job is, ask questions about it. If you're hanging speakers, what kind of speakers are they going to, you know, are we, you know, using motors? Are we going to dead hang these things? Do we have the, you know, but if you're, I think it just thinking about things before you get to them is invaluable.
Yeah. Awesome. Kyle.
Well, especially right now, but even after the lockdown ends, I think utilizing the resources that are out there is really important. Like, you know, we're at a point now where pretty much every media server has free training online. Christy, Barco, they're all offering free training resources. If there's a thing that you're interested in specifically, there's no reason not to be taking advantage of those. And I think there's a lot of us out there that are aware of the resources, but maybe aren't putting the time in. But everything you do to increase your technical ability today is going to increase your worth on the show later on. The other thing is networking. I mean, we've been doing a daily Zoom call with our close friends, and it's been really valuable for just getting everybody to talk, because the most fun thing on every show is comm chatter. And, yeah. You know, and the discussions that you have with the other technicians during the show can create some really interesting breakthroughs and ideas. And so that networking and conversation is really, really valuable. And, you know, I would encourage anyone listening to this to please reach out wherever you are, just call us. We're always willing to talk. We're always willing to invite new people into the
business. And that brings us to the last thing of all. How can they reach you? What's the best way to get a hold of Visional, get a hold of you guys, ask questions, talk to people, bother the heck out of you, spam you on social media, whatever. What's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
We're on every social media platform, Visional Productions on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and all of that. Our website is visional.pro, as in productions, P-R-O.
Okay.
There's tons of ways to reach out get in touch with us directly and talk about, where the future leads.
Awesome. I love it.
I'm going to just add one quick thing that I find it's anecdotal, sort of. Like, you get somebody that has reached out to you, and they've done some study. They've studied up on Spider. Like, say they've taken a few X80 training classes, but they've never touched one. They don't know a thing about it. They get on site though, and they know a feature that I've never even heard of, you know, and they're still learning it. And I think it's a wonderful thing. It's awesome. It's like,
that's great.
And your
willingness to be humble enough to say, I didn't know that. That is so great. I mean, it all comes full circle. And that's fantastic.
It does.
I love that. Awesome, guys. Well, hey, thank you so much. Appreciate the time. Really enjoyed chatting. Really enjoyed the conversation today. It was a lot of fun, and I appreciate it. I hope you guys have a great day, and keep working hard. Hopefully we have a gig really soon.
I'm sure.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks so much for taking the time to listen today. I know that as a professional, each and every one of us want to be better tomorrow than we were today. That's why we've created the Gig Ready Podcast. This is a place where professionals can come and look at what they're doing, look at how they're doing it, and get better every single day. We are solely value for value. We're not going to take corporate interests. We're not going to take sponsorship money. We want you to get better solely because that's what you want. So please give us some feedback. I want to get better. I want to create better podcasts. I want to create better events just like you do. So if you have some value you want to give back, ideas, thoughts, questions, even the ability to be a little critical at times, I would love to hear from you. Thank you so much. I hope you have a great day. Stay safe out there and stay gig ready.